Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name. Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 71, Superman's Christmas Adventure. Welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Steven. And a thousand miles over there to my right is another host, Mr. Ed Moore. Merry Christmas, Ed.
Thank you, sir. Merry Christmas to you and your family as well.
We're doing a special Christmas episode. I don't know why we haven't done one of these yet, because I'm sure we podcasted over Christmas during our first year.
Probably, yeah. But there might not really have been too many Christmas stories that had Superman in it yet.
Yeah.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I know the reason this particular story came to my attention was I was looking at someone's chronology of Superman stories, and I saw that it was right around, you know, the time that we were as far as action and Superman issues. This was the first one that they had listed. So I don't know.
Yeah. You would think it would have been a part of, you know, because we're both reading all these Golden Age stories through those collections, the Superman and the Golden Age.
Right.
And this is from the Golden Age. It's December 1940. So not sure why they didn't include it in the collection. It's out there on the DC Universe app.
Okay.
They've digitized it. So I don't know. That's weird. It's weird why they didn't. Maybe they just hadn't digitized it by the time that first collection came out.
I don't know. I would think that maybe because it was intended as a promotional giveaway, but it has been collected in two other collections. So obviously, there really shouldn't be any rights issues to do it or anything like that. So
Yeah. And not only is it available on the DC app, it's for sale. The digital version's for sale out on Comixology.
Oh, wow. So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can only assume that, you know, nowadays when they put those collections together, the first thing they do is they digitize all of those issues. And that's why if you ever have if there is a collection with an issue in it, you can get the issue separately through Comixology or it's on one of the apps. But I can only assume that whichever collection this would have gone in chronologically, maybe they just hadn't digitized that one issue or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
But
bringing up the for sale, the original, let's see, what was it called? Superman's Christmas Adventure. There are original copies for sale on eBay for the low 4-digit price on the left-hand side of the decimal, not including the right-hand side. So it's like, and that makes sense in a way. Two things. I mean, 1940, that's what? 684 years ago. So that's, you know,
84.
That's way qualifies for antique as far as descriptions. But also, this is a key comic because it includes the first canonical appearance of a very important character in the DC universe.
Santa Claus?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is his first official DC Comics appearance.
Well, and like you said, it was a promotional giveaway. And it was handed out basically in various department stores like Bailey's and Macy's and Royal Crown, Toyland.
They stuffed them in Boston those pink bags or in the purple bags.
Royal I just Crown found a bags. List and I copied the list. But certain ones, you know, if you see certain covers online, you'll see some that have a box in the lower corner that say, it was for Bailey's.
For a stamp,
Some will say Macy's and whatnot. So you know, it's not something that people paid money for. And we already know that at the time, people didn't buy comics and, you know, a lot of folks didn't buy them thinking of them as I have to hold on to this.
Right. Right.
You know, they were disposable, especially as the war started ramping up.
Right.
And the country was asking people to donate paper for the war effort. You know, that's where a lot of comics went at that time. But this one wasn't even one that people paid for. It was handed to them at a department store. So I'm sure it's not an easy one to find.
Right.
And yeah, I can understand it being pretty expensive.
Be even more disposable since, oh, look, they stuck this in the bag. Hey, Johnny, do you want this? Okay, then, you know.
Is this got Batman in it? Because Superman's stupid.
He's a Boy Scout.
He's a big red Boy Scout, blue Boy Scout, or whatever.
Mm.
So if anybody's wondering, we're talking about Superman's Christmas Adventure. It's not labeled as issue number one, but they did do a second one in 1944. So if you find it out there online on any kind of database, they will list it as Superman's Christmas Adventure number one. It was written by Jerry Siegel with art by Jack Burnley. It has a cover date of 1940 and an approximate sale date of December the 1st, 1940, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics. So let me tell you what happened in this story. Clark Kent and Lois Lane are tasked with a Christmas story for the Daily Planet and suggest a toy drive after meeting a poor boy in need. Meanwhile, Superman shows a spoiled rich kid, James Daniels, how little others have, inspiring him to give back. At the North Pole, villains Dr. Grouch and Mr. Meanie plot to ruin Christmas, sabotaging the toy drive and attacking Santa's workshop. Superman thwarts their schemes, rescuing Lois Lane, saving Santa's reindeer, and flying the sleigh himself when the reindeer are incapacitated. We're going to come back to that. By night's end, Santa forgives the villains, who have a change of heart. James delivers gifts to the needy, and Superman wishes all a Merry Christmas. So before we get into it, let's point out that one line. Flying the sleigh himself. So this was a synopsis that I got offline and rewrote it and condensed it. But this is 1940. We've already talked about Superman technically has not flown yet. He won't fly until Superman issue number 10 from 1941. And yet people who are writing the synopsis for this online consider that Superman is flying. And he is. We'll talk about it when we get to those scenes. But he is so flying in this comic book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But there are also a couple panels where he obviously doesn't fly. So it's kind of the character does A, but in order to accomplish what the story wants, the character does B.
Yeah. So what'd you think of this one?
I enjoyed it. To be honest, I find that as I get older, I enjoy comic Christmas stories more than I did when I was younger. I attribute it to age. It may not be age. I don't know what else it would be, but I just know that the past couple years, I've actually had an interest to look and a desire to look up and find and a desire to read Christmas stories around Christmas time. It's not something I want to do year round, but I don't know. Maybe it's an attempt for me to get more into the spirit of the season, or, you know, I'm not sure why exactly and why here lately, like I say, other than perhaps I'm just getting old and nostalgic and whatever else that may be. But I really enjoyed it. I thought that the story itself definitely had a different feel, particularly compared now, without trying to give too much away. We have read stories before and we have read stories after when this was published. And it, in my mind, it sticks out. The before and after kind of brackets a different feel from what this does.
Yes.
I thought this story was much more focused, it felt to me, than other stories that we have read, except perhaps the occasional one that just is really, again, it's hyper-focused on a particular topic, and so everything about the story revolves around that topic.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we have made mention that they seem to incorporate a lot of stuff into the stories whenever they can, which is usually.
Yeah.
And another thing, I really enjoyed this art from Mr. Burnley. And
Oh, yeah.
I believe at some point you have said that you really enjoy his art as well. And it seems now we are reading this from a compendium that has been some digital correction in the coloring, but not as saturated. This color didn't seem as saturated as other presumed digital recolorizations they did. So you saw more of the background line work. And so the line work really, really stood out. Excellent coloring job. If they, you know, I don't know if when they go through and sometimes with this one in particular, they probably change the color palette a little bit in order to get more colors than they would have had available to them at the time. Some recolorings, I think, just stick with the whatever it is, 4 or 8 colors, and that's why it comes in so saturated, because they just stick with that. But this one has some colors in it that I don't necessarily notice that I've seen these particular shades in books before and after. So I think that whoever recolored this, I thought, did a really, really good job and actually added to the environment of the art. The art overall, I thought, was really, really good.
Yeah, there's not, I mean, just looking at page one, while you have blue and red and yellow, Mr. White is in a purple suit. They're not like overwhelmingly bright colors. Mm-hmm. And then you have like Lois is in a green dress, but it's a very toned down. It's kind of a dull green. Clark's wearing a tan overcoat at one point. The colors are really nice. Even just looking at this first page. And the art was excellent. And I would, I got to kind of wonder what kind of deadline maybe Burnley was working with.
Okay.
You know, was he told months in advance, here's this, go ahead and work on it. And he just did it in his spare time.
Right.
Was able, because this, you know, unless they decided in November, we need to do a freaking Christmas comic.
Yeah, no, I don't figure. Something like this would have had to have been signed off on months in advance by these organizations that wanted to take part, and they all would have had to have paid their monies up front and
So, I mean, it has this feel that he got to spend a little more time on it than he did a monthly issue, it looks really, really good. Now, you did mention it's a little more focused, and it is. And yet at the same time, you know, it's all about these two guys, Grouch and Meany, two old dudes who just
classic names.
they want to do away with Christmas. We don't really get any motivation behind that other than the fact that one is a grouch and one is mean. And that's, you know, for a Christmas story, that's really all you need.
Yeah.
You don't need anything else than that. Obviously they have money because they're riding around in what they keep referring to as a spaceship.
That's a killer ship, by the way, dude. Yeah. That was wow.
Yeah. But at the same time, for me, it still felt like they threw in a bunch of crazy stuff because it's not like Grouch and Meany had one plan and they spent the entire issue trying to work. You know, they're like, all right, here's what we're going to do. They go to do that. It fails. All right, now we're going to try this
one.
They do that and it fails. They, you know, it's like these guys, I got to give them credit for their stick-to-itiveness. They don't give up. Every time a plan is foiled, they're right back at it.
Yep.
And there's some moments in this that, I'll point them out when we get to them, but I just was like, these guys are living up to their name.
Mm-hmm.
But so we have, all right, so Mr. White, they still just call him, I think, Chief or Mr. White. I don't think we've got his name as Perry yet.
And
let me say this real quick, looking at the first page, I'm going to open the curtain a little bit because we're recording this episode after we recorded a couple episodes for books that, those episodes will come out later. So even though we're recording anyway, you're going to hear some episodes in the future in which I postulate a theory. Hey, did they ever show Perry White's face? Because it seems like every time I look at him, we're seeing him from the back of the head. And you had mentioned, well, I think maybe we got a side view of him at some point. Yeah, right here, page one, you see his face. So
Well, now, I could argue that you don't see his face because still, just being that half view.
Yeah.
It's still.
It's profile.
Yeah. It's not quite like Lois. Lois, we see her face, right?
Yep.
And in the next panel, I would say that we can see Kent's face.
Yeah.
You know, so going back to the panel with Perry, Clark is in not even a half. It's in like a one-third profile or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's still, you could make an argument that you definitely could say that we haven't seen Perry face on yet, or Mr. Yeah. White, or whatever he's going to be called so far at this point. So I think your supposition still holds true that, yeah, for whatever reason, they're holding back in shifting the camera from Lois yeah. or Clark's point of view, looking at their boss. They really haven't done that yet.
Yeah, and I think one of the main reasons, you know, it's not like the neighbor from Home Improvement where they purposely did not show his entire
fence.
Face.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is more, as I was reading this, because I thought about it right away on this first page. I thought, oh, well, there's going to be an episode coming out in the future that is going to make me sound kind of dumb. But I started to realize that 9 times out of 10, when we're dealing with Perry White in this comic, he's sitting behind his desk talking to Lois and Clark. And so we often get a shot from behind the desk.
Right.
Because the focus of the panel is Lois and Clark. And so that's why we don't see his face all that often.
That makes sense. Sure.
Yeah. So anyway, Perry is sending them out, or Mr. White is sending them out on an assignment to just go around to different department stores and do some stories on what the Christmas season is like, what, you know, color commentary, what's going on, what are the displays like, you know, all that kind of junk. And Lois, she's really happy because she gets to do some Christmas shopping while she's working.
She gets to, as I say, time deepen. She gets to, you know, do multiple things.
So they go to an unnamed department store and they're looking at the toys and an electric train display. And there's a little boy there that they start talking to. And he tells them that his dad and his mom are the poorest, they're poor. And that the closest he ever gets to toys is when he gets to look at them through the store window. And that gives them both an idea. They go back to the paper and they tell Mr. White. And here's one of those scenes where we just see him from the back because we're focused on Lois and Clark. They want to do a campaign at the Planet where they ask readers to donate toys, old toys, and then they will repair them. They'll fix up the toys there at the Planet, which I don't think you could really do that today. Toys are not made to be repaired they were back
then. Certainly
not
today. No, they're disposable, very much so.
Yeah. And so they'll repair the toys and then they'll distribute them to poor kids on Christmas Day. And Mr. White, he's very excited about that. It does sound good. Get to work on it at once. And then we get our first appearance of Santa Claus.
Yes.
He's up in the North Pole and he's reading the article and he's, so I have a couple of new helpers in Clark Kent and Lois Lane. That's fine. And then we get a creepy panel where I have to assume that Clark's walking by a building and he starts spying on the people inside using his X-ray vision. I assumed that he heard a conversation in there and decided just to check it out. And it's a rich little kid who's throwing down a new train set that his dad got him. And he doesn't want any more toys. He's got too many toys. He wants a motorboat or a yacht. And Clark's like, got to do something about that.
Before we get too far away, a couple things I want to point out. Up at the top of that page, Clark finds out that the boy's name is Billy Connolly. No indication of how or why. Supposedly, the little boy told him that.
Yeah.
But two, I noticed the little boy, which I guess is alluding to the fact that he's poor, doesn't have a hat, doesn't have a coat, doesn't have anything like that. And they're standing outside, whereas Clark and Lois have big winter coats on.
Yep.
And the panel with Santa Claus. Exactly how many newspapers does Santa Claus read in order to have come across the Daily Planet? Is that the only one he takes, or does he take like all of them everywhere? Or so
I would like to think that he would read one or two of the big newspapers out of every major country. That's what I would, you know.
Okay. Just to kind of as a touchstone of what is going on in that country at the time. Okay. Yeah. That could be. Yeah. I would, if he gets newspapers, I would like to get access to his library because the storehouse of information that he would have to be pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, and he had to do it old school back then. Nowadays, he's got, you know, a cold computer set up and all that stuff.
Yeah, he's got one of the elves digitizing that crap if it comes in physical format. Yeah,
he's got that North Pole AI working on it.
Yeah, plus he's been around for who knows how long. Imagine the stuff he could have, man.
Yep.
Awesome.
So let's go back to Billy Connolly real quick, because as you were talking about him, I thought you were alluding to something that kind of struck me.
Okay.
Look at Billy in that panel. Mm-hmm. He's got a red shirt on, white collar underneath that shirt. Imagine that white collar was yellow. Imagine that he had yellow at the cuffs of his sleeves. He could be Billy Batson.
Could be.
I don't know. I know that it was around this time that Captain Marvel became a thing. Yep. Billy Batson, I don't know if he was homeless in the I read the origin a couple of years back, and I don't remember. I think he was homeless at that point, but yeah.
Could be they're making an allusion to Captain Marvel.
Could be. So Clark, seeing the spoiled rich kid, he goes home, and that evening he changes into his Superman togs, and he goes out and breaks into this kid's bedroom while he's sleeping.
Yeah, there we go. Okay.
Scaring the crap out of the kid, who wakes up and Superman's standing there.
So is he like the Superman of Christmas Now or something like that?
He's doing the Superman of Christmas Present.
Yeah, present.
Yeah. He picks the kid up and he just says, "Don't be frightened. I'm not going to hurt you." And just takes him out on the town, steals him out of his bed, takes him out on the town. He leaps to a window where he is
hanging. We have a special Christmas Superman hangy, a hangy Superman for Christmas. Yes.
That should be a Christmas ornament right there.
Yep.
Superman hanging from a ledge, clutching holding a child. Little boy.
Yeah, just like that.
That would be awesome. Get on that, DC. That would be awesome. Because you could do it. You could do the bit of the wall with the window and him hanging from it. You could do that whole scene.
Yep.
Hang it from your tree. That'd be pretty sweet. Anyway, so he's hanging from a window ledge on the side of a tenement building, and he's showing James through the window, a little girl sitting on the floor. And James wants to know why she's playing with a broken doll and why a broken doll makes her so happy. And Superman's explaining to this boy that that's all she has. She's learned to find joy even in this broken doll.
In what she has.
And I'm sure old James is scratching his head at that point. So Superman takes him to another window. This time they're standing on the window ledge, peering in. Superman not only steals children from their beds, he is teaching them how to be peeping Toms.
Cat burglar. Yeah, cat burglar Superman, just for Christmas.
Would you say he's grooming this child? I shouldn't have said it. I'm not going to go there.
I would have to say that is quite possible. Yes.
Oh, good Lord. We could go to some pretty dark places with that line of thought.
Oh, well.
But they're standing outside the bedroom of Billy Connolly, who is crying himself to sleep. James wants to know why Billy's crying. And because Superman tells James because he doesn't have any toys at all. The little girl earlier at least had a broken doll. Billy has nothing at all. And they're back in James's bedroom. He's tucking James in for the night. And James is realizing that there are people out there that don't have it as well as he does, don't have it as good as he does. And I think he's thinking about that. He's turning that over in his head as he goes to sleep. So then we go to the North Pole, where a Flash Gordon-esque
absolute
spaceship.
That must be the only spaceship design that there is right now, are those that have appeared in what Raymond? Was that the creator's name? Something Raymond for Flash Gordon?
I don't know.
Maybe not. I withdraw that because I'm not sure. But many of the ships seem to have that same kind of feel to them.
Basically they're just airplanes modified slightly with no wings or.
Yeah.
But on this panel, they're calling it a skyship. So the first time we see it, they refer to it as a skyship at the North Pole, and it's slanting toward the Santa Claus's big toy factory.
That looks rather fortress-like, I might add, too. It doesn't look overly welcoming in this particular panel. It's Santa, I think, is buttoned up for attack. You know, he knows.
Santa. Oh, yeah. We learn pretty quick in this issue that Santa's kind of a badass. I really like the Santa that they created in this issue. You know, he's got the Christmas spirit. He believes in doing the right thing and forgiveness and all that. But he'll also kick your ass if you've messed with him.
Yeah, he's not a pushover. He's just a nice guy. That's
exactly. So also this fort, his toy factory, like you said, it looks like a fortress. Taken out of context, it looks to me like something you'd see in a Star Wars comic.
Okay. It looks like
I could see Jabba the Hutt.
Jabba the Hutt. Yeah, on Tatooine, one of those palaces for the Hutts. Yeah.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
According to the latest report from falsifiedstats.com, there are currently 12 million active comic book podcasts clogging up the internet superhighway, and 2.3 million new comic book podcasts are being created every single day. If you're looking for something a little different, then let me tell you about Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow. Mike travels the globe and visits comic shops along the way, talking to the owners, or really just whomever happens to be minding the store that day. And it's through these conversations that you'll meet some wonderful people and learn how comic shops are run in places like Murfreesboro, Illinois, and Liverpool, New South Wales, Australia. So check out Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow, a truly unique comic book podcast among billions of the same old, same old. Find it now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mike, and I approve this message.
And now, back to the Superman Super Show.
Somebody, whoever's flying this skyship, we see them talking through a word balloon. We haven't met them yet, but they're obviously there. They are up to no good because they're saying, "We'll put an end to all this Christmas foolishness," which sounds like something an old person would say.
And yes.
Sure enough, we go into the skyship, and we meet Dr. Grouch and his crony, Mr. Meany.
And that's what they tell us. It's his crony. That's what the narrator calls him.
Yep, exactly. And they want to put a stop to Christmas. Mr. Meany is saying, "We never enjoyed Christmas when we were children. Why should the kids of today have a good time?" Sounds familiar. So they're there to put a stop to Christmas. Dr. Grouch has an umbrella with him. I only point it out because throughout the issue, as he's doing bad things and battling people and running around and getting in his evil adventures, he's clutching this freaking umbrella the entire time. And I find it very funny.
Must be something about the time that a bad guy had an umbrella. It must be some kind of meme for then or something.
So they go in to meet Santa Claus. They're there under the guise of, you know, they're just interested in how his toy factory works. They want a tour. They want to see how things are done. And then within two panels, they reveal their true intentions. And where's the line that I love? So Mr. Meany tells Santa Claus, "We've come to the point we believe your factories can have a better purpose than making toys for children." Dr. Grouch says, "All this labor and equipment going into a lot of foolishness. You can make commercial products and we can sell them." So it seems they're just angry at the fact that here's this guy. He's got this massive labor force. They obviously are very productive because they can just pump out these toys for all the children around the world. And they're pissed off that he's not using it to make money.
Right.
And that's what they want to use it for. And then I think one of the best lines in the book at this point is when Dr. Grouch tells Superman, when Dr. Grouch tells Santa Claus, "We demand that you conform to our way of thinking."
There you go.
I love that so much.
That's what all bad guys want. Yeah.
That's right. But most bad guys don't come out and say it. It's like you're hearing that a lot lately. He said the quiet part out loud. And that's what he's doing here. "We demand that you conform to our way of thinking or suffer the consequences." And that's when Santa Claus is like, "Yeah, screw that. And he sixes elves on him.
Yep.
And the elves attack Meanie and Grouch with pop guns. And, well, they called them charged electric pods, but they're cattle prods, basically.
Yep.
And the elves drive the two old men out of the factory. And as the skyship, well, this time they call it a strange sky vessel, as it's taking off, Santa Claus is out in the snow with his elves, and he's shaking his fist in the air at the skyship. Good riddance! And that's when the two old men decide, let's try a different tack, because we're not done. This isn't over. You'll see me again, Santa Claus, basically.
Yep.
And so they decide to break into the Daily Planet, because if they can't, I guess, if they can't stop Santa Claus at the source, the next best thing is to stop this toy drive going on at the Daily Planet.
Right. They can't stop the original, so they'll stop the reseller is what it is.
So Lois and Clark are at the Daily Planet working late. They're actually repairing the toys. That's nice to see. They didn't just come up with the idea and then pick a bunch of interns to do all the work. Yeah,
turn it over to somebody else.
Yeah. They're over there actually fixing the toys themselves. Clark hears something outside. Lois doesn't. She doesn't have the super hearing, and she tells him to get back to work. And that's when Grouch and Meanie come in with their white masks on and a gas gun. And they gas Clark, who pretends to be unconscious. They gas Lois, and then they set fire to the toys.
There you go.
So, yeah, these are not nice guys. These are some really...
No.
Grouch and Meanie don't really do justice to these two fellas.
And I like how they're wearing their bandanas. They're not wearing them just like below the nose or over the nose. They're wearing them above the eyebrow with slits cut in the eyes to see.
Yes.
So it's like it's like that character, what was his name from Wildcats back in Image's early
Grifter.
Days? Yes. Wearing the bandana like that, way up here over the eyebrow, covering the rest of the face. Yeah.
Yep. Well, and Lois struggles with Dr. Grouch before he gasses her, and she's able to remove his mask. And we learn that Dr. Grouch is a known man because she recognizes him immediately.
Yes, he's known to Lois anyways.
Yeah, it's Dr. Grouch. I would like to know what he has a doctorate in. Is he a medical doctor? Uh-huh. Is it a, you know, is it a more of a, an what's the other kind of doctorate? It's
just an educational. I mean,
educational,
you have a
PhD. Doctor, yeah.
PhD.
You
have a doctorate. So, yeah. And he doesn't do really anything medically inclined in the story if he is a medical doctor.
Yeah. But maybe he's a scientist and that's why they have a spaceship and a gas gun.
Maybe so. Yeah.
So Lois is gassed. She's unconscious. The old men flee thinking that they've done their job. They've set fire to the toys. They have destroyed Christmas, basically. But they have no idea that Clark is actually Superman and that he's faking it. And so he gets up, uses his super breath to extinguish the fire, sees that Lois is about to wake up. And so he pretends to be just waking up as well.
I think this is one of the first times Superman uses his breath to do anything as well.
I think so, yeah. I don't know that we, especially when it comes to putting out a fire.
Cooling things off, you know, he's done it before. Creating distance between things, he'll blow at times, and so a lot of these things just haven't become the regular things that Superman does yet.
Yeah. All right. So Lois wakes up. Clark pretends that he's just waking up, and she tells Clark that it was Dr. Grouch, and then she leaves. And Mr. Meanie is also a known man because Lois realizes that if Dr. Crouch was involved, then the other guy had to have been Mr. Meanie.
Right.
And she thinks she knows where they are. So we go back to their laboratory. So he is a scientist. And we find out that they have cameras in the Daily Planet because they immediately go to this giant view screen to see. They want to watch the toys burn. They get off on that. Oh, let's watch the toys burn.
Yeah, that's...
They are so angry and disappointed to find out that, you know, they just see Clark sitting at the table and he's repairing toys. There's no fire. They're very upset about that. So at this point, they have hatched two different schemes to try to take down Christmas. They've both failed, but they are not done yet.
Because they are determined to puncture the happiness of children forever.
Wow.
That's, puncture the happiness. Yeah, that's...
They say at the beginning that they never enjoyed Christmas. So they, I don't know what their childhoods were like. I'm assuming they had a very overbearing father. A lot of this stuff is because of the father.
Daddy issues?
Daddy issues, yeah. So they decide that they're going to go back to the North Pole. They get into the spaceship. They call it the spaceship for the first time. And the way they're talking, Mr. Meanie says, "I'll smash every music box. I'll wring the neck of every doll." And they're running through the snow, getting into the spaceship. Dr. Grouch is carrying his umbrella.
His umbrella.
Lois sneaks aboard the spaceship because she arrives in time to see them getting on the spaceship. Everything happens really fast on this page because we have six panels. Panel one, the two bad guys are getting on the ship. Panel two, Lois is getting on the ship. Panel three, they're at the North Pole. Dr. Grouch, clutching an umbrella in one hand and a gas gun in the other, is gassing an elf.
Right.
Panel four, they're in Santa's workshop and they are destroying toys. "Ha! I hate these toys," Dr. Grouch says as he just destroys stuff. Panel five, Lois has come in to find them. And so they capture Lois. And in panel six, they have tied her to a giant skyrocket.
Yep.
Why do they need to call it a skyrocket? Where else is a rocket going to go?
To me, it looks like the things that you always see in the cartoons that are giant fireworks.
Yes, this is definitely a Wile E. Coyote type of thing going on here. This is a Bugs Bunny, Looney Tunes. Yeah, it's the big red rocket that's on a stick.
Yep.
It's really dumb looking. But it fits the theme of this story.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to have Santa Claus, if you're going to have elves, if you're going to have bad guys named Grouch and Meanie, and they want to destroy Christmas just because they're grouchy and mean, yeah, this fits.
Yep.
I think in a normal Superman story, we might go, all right, this is a little over the top. But because you'd have to assume, because you almost associate fireworks with toys, right?
Kinda.
It's you know, so you can see that this is something that maybe they didn't have it with them. It was there in Santa's workshop. You know, to see Santa Claus having something like that.
And it was Lois. But if it had been Superman, it probably would have been more futuristic, rocket shippy, something like that looking. But because it was Lois, you could get away with a lower rent type of situation there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we go to page nine and our two bad guys are back to wrecking the shop. And here's the line I've been waiting for. Mr. Meanie. They both have axes. I should say that. They both have axes and they are chopping up all the toys. And as they are doing that, Mr. Meanie is calling out, "Tears, tears, the world will be flooded by the tears of little children." I don't know that I have ever come across a more evil bad guy in a Christmas story than Mr. Meanie right there.
He is without a doubt evil. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think even the Grinch would have been cackling in delight over the thought of just the gallons of tears that the children all over the world will be crying.
Yep.
Dr. Grouch agrees with him because he's yelling out, "This is great," as they smash things. Well, what they don't know is that Santa Claus has a security system. He knows what's going on and he basically takes all the toy soldiers and uses them as his own little private army. And they go in and attack Grouch and Meanie. Hey, I for the first time, I just noticed the Superman action figure in panel three.
Yeah. He apparently doesn't do anything because we don't see him in the next panel.
Right?
But yeah, you've got the soldiers and a tank and a cannon.
Yep. And they're firing some sort of bullets, some sort of ammunition. Grouch and Meanie. It doesn't kill him, of course, but I'm sure it hurts because they run away. I mean, they're old men. You know, these aren't, I mean, maybe this is what 60 looked like in 1940.
Yeah.
But they look like they're 70, 80 years old. They look like 80-year-old men is what they look like to me. They could be the president. Hey, that was not for either side. Both of those men are old.
Are very old, yes.
They're very, very old. Biden is, I think, the on record as the oldest president and Trump is not that far behind him.
Nope.
Age-wise. But yeah, these guys are freaking old. They got the white hair. They're bald on top. They're old.
And they both wear
not
glasses.
Not that I'm an ageist. I should stop harping on how old they are. I just think it's funny that these senior citizens are flying around in a spaceship wrecking toys with axes.
Well, they're a couple of grumpy old men. And, you know, so I mean, they're hitting all those check marks to be called that because, yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Sitting on their porch and yelling at children to get off their lawn isn't good enough for them.
Yeah.
It's just not enough. They need more. They need to inflict more pain upon the world.
They want to do that to the whole world, not just the few that are close to their yard. Yeah. Also, you see that the doctor doesn't have his umbrella here in anywhere on this page, nope. Actually. He's got an axe, and he's throwing up his hands, dropping the axe, and then he's running and then sitting in his controls here for the ship. No umbrella on this page.
No. Nope. Last time we saw him with an umbrella was the previous page when he was gassing an elf.
Mm-hmm.
He had to put the umbrella down because he needed both hands to swing the axe.
Oh, okay. Okay. I guess he left the umbrella on the ship, I guess, when he...
Yeah, he either left it on the ship or it's leaning against a wall. And then when this little toy soldiers came to attack, he ran out without it.
I bet he has a secret pocket in his coat, just like Highlander always did during the series, because these brothers are always pulling these big ass swords out of their coat.
Yep. Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. He either has that or he's probably got dozens and dozens of umbrellas.
So he just ditches that when he gets another one. Yeah, could be.
I got five more on the spaceship. That's okay. So once again, they've hatched an evil scheme. Once again, their plan is foiled. But once again, they are not deterred. They have another idea in mind. They refer to this as a brilliant plan and the stroke of a mastermind. In the meantime, this panel of Lois strapped to this giant firework as it streaks through the sky might be the single greatest panel in this issue.
Okay.
There's just something super hilarious about it. There's no life in that panel. She looks like an action figure that was because it's a giant firework. To me, she looks like a doll that was strapped to a bottle rocket and then shot into space. But Superman, noticing that Lois has been gone for a while, Clark, noticing that Lois has been gone for a while, she went after Crouch, she hasn't come back, he changes into Superman, and he starts searching for Lois using his telescopic vision. Now, we know that we've seen him use his telescopic vision before, but I think this is the first time we've seen him use it in that type of fashion, where he is just searching for miles and miles and miles using his telescopic vision to see if he sees Lois. And he sees her in the sky, rocketing towards space, tied to this giant bottle rocket. And he jumps to get her.
Right.
But apparently he jumps at incredible speed. He times it just right so that he's able to grab her. I guess he untied her. We just didn't see him do that. He's just pulling her away from the rocket. He drops her off on the roof of the Daily Planet, tells her to stay there, basically. She tries to thank him. He tells her, save your thanks, as he jumps away, which sounds really rude. I'm sure it's meant to be, you don't need to thank me, ma'am.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Now, also keep in mind that he was in Metropolis, and from Metropolis or somewhere there close to it, he sees Lois. Lois is trapped on a giant firework being shot into the air at the North Pole. So he then goes to the North Pole, he rescues Lois, and then he takes her back to Metropolis and drops her off on a rooftop there.
Yeah.
So
she must have been, I mean, based on the curvature of the Earth, she must have been very high up in the sky for him to see her.
Okay.
Because, you know, there's going to be stuff in the way, not just the Earth itself, the curvature of the Earth, but mountains and trees and junk to see all. First of all, yeah, he can see all the way to the North Pole. That's pretty amazing. But to see her up there, it does look like, you know, it is nighttime out, but it almost looks like she's about to hurtle into space.
Maybe she's on the edge, which would allow him to look more up and see that she's there rather than avoid a lot of the issues you're talking about if he's able to look up higher. So, but he did it in one leap.
Yes, he did.
I mean, you know, so yeah. Anyways, because he's still not flying. Yeah.
Nope. No. It also appears that they either let off some other fireworks when they sent her up on this giant bottle rocket, or as this bottle rocket is rocketing through the sky, it's got other fireworks that are shooting off of it because there are little sparks all around her. There's some kind of, I'm assuming that's a firework there in the bottom of that panel.
I think that's meant to be the sun showing you that they're at the North Pole. And then these are just stars because of the perpetual night that, because this, this effect down here, we have seen on several other panels. If you go back and look while they're at the North Pole from different angles. So
Aurora Borealis thing that's going on.
Yeah. I think all of this in this panel was meant to give you the impression that it's the North Pole that Lois is still in. That's what I took it to mean.
Yeah, I can see that. We go back to Dr. Grouch and Mr. Meany. They're in the spaceship, and Grouch is looking through his telescope, and he sees Lois Lane on the roof of the Daily Planet. He's very upset about that, because not only are there not gallons of tears flowing from children's eyes, they were not able to kill Lois Lane, so he's very upset. But they go to the Daily Planet to seize her, and then that's when they decide, is this now... Yeah, that's when they decide after they've got her, they're going to then hatch their grand scheme, their big plan, and they go back to the North Pole.
Yes.
Three times now they've gone to the North Pole.
Going to kidnap Santa's reindeer, they say here.
Yep.
So
they've
tried to take over toy production. That didn't work. They've tried to destroy toy distribution, and that didn't work. They tried to destroy toy construction, and that didn't work. So now they're hitting the supply chain by taking out the reindeer. So these are upper level ways to try to stop this whole thing that's going on. I mean, they are thinking very big, but yeah, they just keep coming up with attempt after attempt of really major things to do to prevent kids on Christmas from receiving presents.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, I mean, they're, like I said, they're obviously very wealthy, and it can't just be because they're scientists and have a laboratory. They have to be like Lex Luthor types. They probably own a lot of businesses. Right. They're CEOs. Yeah. So this is like, they know what they're doing. Well, they actually manage to kidnap Santa's reindeer, which I don't know if you can consider abducting reindeer as kidnapping, but.
I don't even know if it's against the law, is it? I don't know.
But the elves tell Santa Claus that they've taken off with their reindeer. And at this point, Santa's done. He doesn't know what to do at this point. He's very sad. The children are not going to get their Christmas presents. And one of the elves has a suggestion that he tries to get the assistance of Superman. Santa Claus likes that idea. He gets on his own private radio station. Mm-hmm. And sends out a distress call to Superman.
W. Claus. all Christmas, all the time. Radio. Yeah.
I like how the microphone has a lightning bolt on it and a little star on the top of it.
I guess to show it's on. I don't know what I don't know what that means.
Well, Clark is in his car driving along, and he picks up the broadcast of the distress signal from Santa Claus, changes it to Superman. And he zooms through the sky at terrific super speed, headed north.
Jumping. He's not flying. He's jumping.
Such a powerful jump that not only can he jump far, he jumps fast.
Right.
And even says out loud as he's leaping, at this rate, I should be there in a few minutes. Now, when he arrives at the North Pole, we get this wonderful panel of him hurtling out of the sky as if he's, you know, he's in free fall, basically. He looks just like like somebody who's jumped out of a plane. He's all akimbo, arms and legs spread out before him. And Santa Claus tells him what the problem is, that the reindeer have been kidnapped. Superman tracks down Mr. Meany in a truck that has all the reindeer inside of it. Using his X-ray vision, he's able to confirm that the reindeer are there. He picks up the truck, jumps back to the North Pole, because I don't think the truck was at the North Pole. No, it's in Metropolis. So he leaps to the North Pole,
right?
Talks to Santa Claus, leaps back to Metropolis,
right?
Finds the truck, picks the truck up, carrying it, leaps back to the North Pole, opens it up, reveals the reindeer inside. Must have forgotten that Mr. Meany was in the driver's seat, or just thought, he's an old man. What's he going to do? Well, Meany leaps out of the truck, runs around, and uses his gas gun to gas the reindeer. So now the reindeer are asleep.
Now, this potentially could have been a problem, because if they really wanted to do something, what's to say this gas wasn't poisonous gas this time?
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Who's to say it won't affect a reindeer different than it will affect a person?
Superman just didn't do a very good job of securing the bad guys. He was too excited about the fact that he foiled their plan, and he wanted those positive strokes from Santa showing him, look, I did good. I solved the problem. Completely forgetting about the bad man in the front of the truck.
Yeah. He's just so happy to be helping Santa Claus.
Yep.
He didn't think about that stuff. Well, another great line from Mr. Meany, as Santa Claus is very upset that the gifts will not be delivered because the reindeer are now asleep. Mr. Meany says, "Ha! Gloom will pervade the universe after all."
Wow.
What an asshole.
He is just, he is so dark inside. It's just,
he really
wow.
is. Wow. Because this is the same one looking forward to all the tears.
Yes, the tears of the children. And
tears
now,
of children.
Now he's excited about gloom pervading the universe. It's like, wow, dog, you are.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
Remember the magic of Saturday mornings? A time when waking up early wasn't a chore, it was an adventure. Those hours were sacred, a weekly ritual that pulled us into worlds of animated heroes, villains, and endless possibilities. Hey folks, I'm Steven, and I want to welcome you to my new podcast, Growing Up Geek, a temporal odyssey through the geek-centric cultural zeitgeist of my youth. From the 70s through the 80s and on into the 90s, we'll explore the movies, the music, the books, the comics, and the TV shows that shaped my childhood and made me, well, me. In our first season, we're diving into the golden age of Saturday morning cartoons, the history, the magic, and the cultural impact these shows had on a generation. So grab your cereal, settle in, and let's relive those iconic Saturday mornings together. Whether you're a lifelong geek who lived for those Saturday morning lineups, or someone curious about the cartoons that defined a generation, Growing Up Geek is the show for you. So subscribe now to make sure that you don't miss a minute of the fun, nostalgia, and stories that defined our weekends. You know, when we were growing up geek.
And now, back to the Superman Super Show.
Did you ever watch South Park?
No.
There's an episode where Cartman makes an older kid cry. The older kid was bullying him. Cartman hatches this big scheme, and it's been a while since I've seen it, but in the end, the older boy starts crying, and Cartman literally comes up to him and starts licking the tears off of his face. And he's going, "Oh, the tears are so good." That's who this guy was when he was a kid.
Okay. Know? Okay.
But Superman has a plan. He snatches up Mr. Meany, throws him into the sleigh, tells Santa to get in the sleigh with all the toys, and Superman picks up the sleigh, and again, because he can't fly, he just leaps all over the world.
And
they deliver all the presents. And he tosses Mr. Meany through the guy's chimney into his house.
From the sleigh as they're flying past. I mean, so it's...
Yeah. Even a spry young man at the peak of health is probably going to suffer some broken bones from that.
Yes.
But an old dude like this, that could easily kill him. And yet Superman is telling him, "Don't say we didn't give you anything, Meany. We are your life." As he throws him through a chimney from up in the sky. But again, it's a Santa Claus story. So there's these cartoony elements
that
you just buy. You don't even think about it. You know, if Bugs Bunny tossed Elmer Fudd like that through a chimney and Elmer Fudd was in the fireplace going, "Oh, man."
Yep.
That's what it's like. Well, because it's because a Santa Claus Christmas story.
This particular book is not a superhero comic book.
Right.
It's a Christmas story book. Just happens to have, you know, a particular character in it. So even though it may look, you know, similar, the writing aesthetic has to be completely different in order to remain a Christmas story.
Yeah.
And there is no Nakatomi Plaza in this issue, so there's no question that this is a Christmas story. Just
well, I think when Santa Claus is one of the main characters,
it's a definite.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
When all it's, right. I mean, this is literally Superman saving Christmas. You could argue that John McClane is saving Christmas for his family and the people in Nakatomi Plaza.
Yes, and for the families of the people in the plaza. Yes, or the people on all the airplanes that he helps land in the next movie.
Right.
Or, you know, so yeah, he is spreading Christmas cheer in his movies, I think.
Yeah.
Suffering greatly from having done so, but yeah, he is spreading Christmas cheer.
My son-in-law posts on Facebook every Christmas that Die Hard is not a Christmas movie, so I always have to take up the contrary.
Oh, absolutely.
And argue that it is. I just because it's him. So Grouch finds Mr. Meany in the fireplace after having been tossed through the chimney. And he tells Mr. Meany that they still have Lois Lane as their captive.
Right.
And so they may not have been able to stop Christmas, but they can still get their revenge. They don't say how, but I assume he means by killing Lois Lane. But before they can do that, they hear something from the next room. They grab their gas gun. They go to look and they see Superman and Santa Claus leaving them Christmas presents. Superman is asking Santa Claus, really? You're going to give them Christmas presents after everything that they've done?
No doubt.
And Santa Claus tells Superman,
Here is the theme of the book.
Yep.
This is it right here.
Superman says, you're still going to leave them gifts despite all the harm they've done you? Santa Claus says, yes, it's the Christmas spirit to forgive your foes. I'm sure there is some good in both Grouch and Meany. And just like that, Grouch and Meany are good guys again. Well, or if they were ever good guys. But suddenly their hearts grew three sizes that day.
Yes.
And they are just suddenly just like, oh my gosh, he gave us Christmas presents. That just makes us so happy that we are never going to do evil again. Please, Santa, just shake my hand. That's all I want. They let Lois free. Grouch tells Lois, Meany and I want to apologize to you, miss. And Lois, very against character for Lois, I have to say, says no apologies are necessary. If you've got the true Christmas spirit, I'm satisfied. I think under normal circumstances, Lois would have kicked him in the shins and called the police.
Definitely. Yeah.
But they go back to the North Pole with Lois because she goes along with them. They still have presents to deliver. Between the panel of Lois being set free and Superman and Lois at the North Pole, which is the very next panel, we learn that she went with them to deliver the rest of the presents. Superman takes her back to Metropolis. He goes to then visit James Daniels, the little rich boy, to find that James and his butler are leaving the house loaded down with presents to go hand them out to unfortunate children. And that's when Superman turns to the camera. We get our final panel. I hope all you readers will remember to be generous to those less fortunate than yourselves. And now, Merry Christmas to you and a Happy New Year.
And
Superman's
missing
a cape in that previous panel. It's there. You can see it around his neck.
But not behind
him. They forgot
him.
To draw the rest of it.
And of course, at the end of the story, there's the image of a small, formerly mute child that whispers, God bless us, everyone. And everyone starts clapping and cheering. Yeah.
Yeah, but you have to hold it up to the light to see that.
Yeah.
It's a
That probably is my favorite Christmas movie, Scrooge. I watch that every year. I really enjoy that movie.
Scrooge or Scrooged?
ED, Scrooged with Bill Murray.
With Bill Murray. Yes.
Yeah.
Love that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's and Bobcat Goldthwait for anybody out there who even remembers who that is. That's
when he suggests stapling the antlers on the mice.
Yes. Yep.
Don't you staple those on. I would never do such a thing, ma'am. I love that movie.
Yeah, that's a fun movie. I enjoyed the story. Like I said at the top of the show, it really felt different. It seems like everything was more honed in and more one themed than a lot of the stories. And then it was just a pleasure visually compared to kind of the on again, off again, golden age Superman stuff that we've been running into.
Yeah, this is an animated Christmas special.
Oh,
but made into a comic book.
Oh, I would love to have seen Fleischer do this. That would have been awesome.
Oh my God, that'd be awesome.
That would have been so awesome. Yeah.
I ran into a fan made animated Superman short the other day on YouTube that was like 13 years old. See if I can find it again and send it to you because it's pretty amazing. But yeah, that's what this was. It was an animated Christmas short in comic book form. It had all the elements, of course, you know, the bad guys who hate Christmas. We assume based on this ending that the reason they hated Christmas is they must have never gotten a Christmas present in their entire lives.
I guess that's what it is. Yeah.
I can also assume that if you think about the little boy we meet at the beginning, Billy, whose parents are poor, who cries himself to sleep because he's not getting any Christmas presents that year. That is probably who these two old dudes were, you know, when they were kids. And there's the potential of this little boy growing up to be like these men. But because Superman intervened with the spoiled rich kid, we're going to, you know, it's none of it spelled out. You have to assume that Billy is going to get some of these presents that James and his butler are leaving the house with. And they have also prevented a future attack on Santa Claus because Billy is not going to grow up to be like Meanie and Grouch. But yeah,
just a good, fun, a lot more fun than most of the other stories we have read.
Yes.
Fun was obviously the intent of this, whereas, you know, the typical superhero comic book, fun doesn't seem to be the overriding theme, although it will crop up from time to time. If I have found that if superhero comics are fun, typically it's because of a particular event or like a holiday or a particular fun theme, like, you know, something about picnics or the great American pastime of baseball or, you know, if the book's theme is something like that. But on just a chapter to chapter situation, superhero comics seldom are fun.
Yep.
So it was good to. Particularly Superman, you know, it will come to pass that Superman maybe at some point has gone years without seemingly having any fun. But here in the Golden Age, at least for Christmas, he is having a fun story.
Yeah. And, you know, it's because it's a Christmas story, it allows the creators to do stuff with Superman that they have not really ever done before.
Right.
And yeah, like you said, they get to have way more fun with it than they normally would. And I can imagine if this was an animated Christmas special and they were playing it in a movie theater at the time, every time we saw Meanie and Grouch do something evil, especially smashing the toys with the axes while Meanie shouted out that he's happy to see all the tears, I could hear little kids in a theater going, boo, hiss, hiss, boo. That's definitely the type of bad guys these guys were. And yet they are completely forgiven at the end because they have the Christmas spirit suddenly.
They are redeemable, ultimately, is your takeaway. Yeah.
It's, you know, when in A Christmas Carol, when Ebenezer Scrooge wakes up on Christmas Day and he throws the window open, sees the boy in the street. Boy, what day is it? Why, it's Christmas morning, sir. I haven't missed it. You know, that's believable. Whereas the turnaround here with these guys, oh my gosh, you gave us some Christmas presents. Please forgive us.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Kind of a quick turn there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Lois was only strapped to a rocket. She was only shot into the air. She was about to be murdered if they hadn't shown up with these presents. And yet she's like, you don't even have to apologize. No apologies necessary.
Yeah,
that's what the Christmas spirit will do to you, folks.
Some strong stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you what, Christmas has always been my favorite time of the year. Of course, once you become an adult and you're in a certain financial bracket, it also becomes the most stressful time of the year. I have a real love-hate relationship with Christmas.
Sure.
But I don't know that I've ever had, maybe as a small child, that's who this story is really made for. Maybe as a small child, I would have had enough Christmas spirit to forgive these guys. But, you know, somebody comes over to my house on Christmas and knocks a potted plant off my porch. I'm not going to forgive them. I'm going to go out and give them what for.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, just because it's Christmas, I'm not going to be like, ah.
Go ahead. It's fine.
You got the Christmas spirit in you. That's why you did it. That was a bad analogy, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
So before we wrap it up, let's talk about Christmas for a moment. Do you have big childhood Christmas memories? Is there a certain present that you got as a child that just always, when you think of Christmas, that's something you always think about? Or maybe something you got for your kids?
When I was little, I don't necessarily remember a specific time, but I do recall that, I was born in Illinois. My mom and dad were there, obviously. Neither one were from Illinois. They both had migrated to live their life, find their money, you know, whatever people do when you ultimately move away from home right after you graduate high school. At 7 years of age, my dad wanted to move back to where he was from to save me from having to grow up in Chicago and becoming part of the evils of a big city.
Yeah.
So once we were back in West Virginia, that's where my dad was from. My mom was from Kentucky, Frankfort, the tobacco growing part of Kentucky. So actually her upbringing was very, very similar to dad's. Dad grew up in a southern West Virginia coal camp. Mom grew up the granddaughter and daughter of subsistence farmers. So very, very similar lifestyles. So when we moved back to West Virginia, we would go on holidays and Christmas being one of those to my dad's mom's house. And that's where all of the family that was still in the area would gather for those big holidays. So I remember Christmas. My grandmother was of the generation that for holidays, she cooked. She cooked from 2 or 3 days before until it was set in front of you the afternoon of the holiday. So it was major cooking, major food. That's where my interest and enjoyment of food really began, is those home-cooked things. So that's what I remember. She would have a big tree. Everybody that was going to be coming to dinner would have at least one present under the tree so they could open something, gather around after the dinner and everything. So I remember that aspect of Christmas. As far as my adult life, when I had children, I particularly enjoyed getting my sons something that maybe they had mentioned as a one-off, but nobody had really paid any attention to the fact that they liked it or said it would be cool to have one of those or something like that. Those were always the kind of things that I made a note of and tried to get so that it was a complete surprise for them when it showed up on Christmas morning, whatever it may be, whatever, this or that electronic, whatever, the new hotness or something that they missed from several years back, they never got, or, you know, whatever it might be. So those are the two real aspects of Christmas that I remember. Now as a empty nester, a graybeard, if you will, probably my thoughts of Christmas typically are more disappointed than anything else, because in my mind right now, Christmas has become so much of what I don't believe it was ever intended to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, now it's a very materialistic, spend your money, I want your money, kind, you know, and I just, any beliefs of religion aside, which I happen to harbor a lot of those beliefs as well, but that's not what I'm talking about. I think Christmas is supposed to be my thoughts are, now I enjoy giving people things for Christmas. And I have to remember that when people get me things, that you have to be willing to receive presents, gifts, in the same manner in which you want to give them to people.
Yep.
That same feeling. You can't be embarrassed because somebody got you something, or embarrassed about what they got you or anything like that. It's, you know, it's the thought and the intent behind someone giving you a present. And so you receive in the same way that you want to treat people in giving them presents. And that's, yeah. that's the kind of thing to me now that's more important. To me that is important. All this other commercialism and all that crap and anti this religion and anti that religion and include them all when you open your mouth. And it's like, okay, yeah, whatever. That's, yeah. they're important discussions to have. Yes. And if someone wants to bring them up, I'll be more than happy to discuss my thoughts on those aspects. But I try to keep it, particularly for Christmas, boiled down to the giving people something that they want or need simply because you can. Yep. No expectation of any recompense or any, that is not the point. You don't give to receive, in my mind. You give because you can, and you give because someone else wants or needs, and you can. That's, yep. that's all it takes. All that other stuff is other discussions, whatever, but that's, and so that's always where I try to keep things.
Do you guys have any like traditions growing up that maybe a little different than?
No, because for the most part, most of my life, my mom and dad had us living the American contemporary Christian lifestyle. And so that kind of dictated how Christmas was handled in your particular family. And so we adhered to most of those, whatever ideas or tropes or whatever you want to call them, but that's the way most of our Christmases were patterned.
As a kid, we were one of those families that always did the, you open up one present on Christmas Eve.
Okay. Okay.
And then
everything
the rest
else.
Of them,
that, right. And did you get to pick or was it picked for you?
It's picked for us.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of times it was like pajamas.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's our parents had, you know, while we still believed in Santa Claus, you know, the idea back then was you got presents from Santa Claus, but you also got presents from mom and dad.
Sure. Yep.
And so the presents that were under the tree when you went to bed, Christmas Eve, those were the mom and dad presents. And then you woke up and there were more presents under there.
Those were the Santa presents.
The one thing about Christmas that I hadn't really thought about until I became a parent. You know, my dad was an air traffic controller. And in the late 70s, early 80s, they all got laid off. So mm-hmm. they went on strike.
Right.
And, you know, they really struggled. Dad did a lot of odd jobs, changed up jobs a lot until he finally got on at the post office. But we never, as kids, we didn't really, the only reason we knew at times that they were struggling financially is my mom, she'd always run a daycare center out of the house. Even when, you know, when my dad was an air traffic controller, he made good money. And, I guess they felt that they had to try to keep that up for us as the kids.
Okay.
But my mom, because she ran this daycare center, she was able to start getting at the time, like government cheese and stuff like that. And the only reason that sticks out to me is because a lot of the stuff that she'd get, like the cheese and the peanut butter, was just horrible tasting. It was just not good stuff. And that's the only time I can ever remember as a kid going, oh, I don't think we have a lot of money because like we used to. But otherwise, I don't ever remember, you know, them saying it's going to be a lean Christmas this year. They always found a way to do something. I do remember many occasions being in a store with them and going, I want this toy. And they're like, no, we can't buy that. And I never understood why until, you know, as I got older, I did. But yeah.
Cool.
You guys did the stockings and all that stuff?
Yep. Still do now, as a matter of fact. Yeah. My wife and I, she crochets. So every year she will crochet stockings and fill them with things and send them to family. And so she and I have stockings that she has crocheted. And she'll crochet ours, like, back in the summer. And we each get one. And then it's up to us to fill it. To give to the other for Christmas. And there's kind of a rule that it's got to be smaller stuff that fits in the stocking. It can't be like the receipt for something big or a picture of something big or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's yep. got to be able to fit in the stocking. And yeah, so we do that. And among our other things that we exchange, we give each other our stockings.
Yeah, that, you know, one of the traditions that we did once I got married and we started having kids, and it was kind of Karen brought it into the family, was, you know, we do the stockings. We've never had a fireplace. We'd lay them out in front of the TV.
Okay.
And then, so in the mornings when the kids got up, they, of course, couldn't open presents until mom and dad were up, but they were allowed to get into their stockings.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And in the stocking, there was always, you know, fun little toys. Like you said, it had to fit in the stocking. So there was always fun stuff for them, like toys and puzzles and games. But there was always a new toothbrush.
Okay.
For many years, it would be like one of those motorized, like a Winnie the Pooh or something you'd get from Walgreens. And there was always a Christmas ornament. That was, you know, it's my parents never got us Christmas ornaments. And I remember the first time Karen saying that, we'll get them Christmas ornaments and put them in their stocking. And I'm like, Christmas ornament? And she goes, yeah, get them a Christmas ornament every year. And then when they're adults and they leave the house and they buy their first Christmas tree, they'll already have ornaments. Because they will have gotten an ornament every year.
That's true.
And so that's what we've always done for them.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about this wonderful Christmas story?
No, it's fun. And anybody that has an opportunity to buy it should get it. And in most of the two collections that I have seen, it is one of many Christmas stories. I don't know if the other Christmas stories are as fun, because in the collection I've got, I just read this Superman story. That's why I got the book, was for this story. If the other stories are anywhere near as fun, then both of the collections have 8-10 stories that are a whole lot of fun, including this Superman story. So
yeah,
go out and get it and enjoy reading just a nice, fun, themed comic book story.
Well, and I'll show you real quick. Because I went ahead and picked this up through Comixology because it was very inexpensive. But I got it, and I got, let's see, how do I share? Okay.
Okay, yeah.
I got that. There were two Christmas comics, like, apparently they came out in 1988. There was that one and that one.
Okay, yeah.
Christmas all the superheroes.
Different DC heroes of different eras. Yeah. And that's the cool thing typically about collections up to a certain point. I don't think they do it as much now. The collections now, I think, all pretty much contain contemporary stories. But once upon a time, you'd get a Christmas collection, and it could have stories from any period in it.
Yeah.
And that's what made it fun.
Well, these are both, these are both from 1998, and it's a number one and a number two issue. That's got a nice John Byrne cover on it. So yeah, mm-hmm. It's just called Christmas with Superheroes, issues 1 and 2. I haven't read them yet. If I get a chance to read them within the next, I don't know, few days, I may do a special Christmas episode of Just Another Fanboy. Talk about those two issues. All right, then let's wrap this sucker up. This has been the Superman Super Show. It's been a very special Christmas episode with Ed and Steven. Till next week, folks, I'm Steven, that's Ed. And this was the Superman Super Show. Merry Christmas.
Ciao.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to the Superman Super Show at gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Steven or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out stevenorelse.com or just use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Superman's bad. I mean, he was bad.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.